ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Millions of Europeans have head to the polls overnight, with far-right parties on the ballot in three countries' elections. From Wurundjeri Country, I'm Luxidam Dundon, and today on the Breakfast Wrap podcast, how have the far-right fared in elections in Romania, Poland and Portugal? You're going to hear from the Vice President of the European Parliament.
We are in the middle of a global war for values.
Also on the podcast, Israel prepares to increase military pressure on Gaza while offering aid relief. We'll bring you the story of a doctor working in one of the hospitals bombed by Israeli forces. And then back home, there is a huge surge in scripts for medicinal cannabis. So is the regulation keeping up with the demand?
There's been over a million scripts written since this scheme started. The big majority of people on that scheme are getting benefit from it and aren't being harmed. But of course, the product does have potential for harm, like any medicine. I myself have changed my prescription three times to get it right. Of course, I would be concerned if people are only ticking a box and they're getting a telehealth consultant. It's us just having a more mature relationship with cannabis.
All of that coming up on the Breakfast Wrap podcast. But first, voters in Romania, Poland and Portugal have head to the polls overnight in major elections. In Portugal's general election, the centre-right incumbent has won but has fallen short of securing a majority. But the real story there is the rise of the hard-right populist party. It could win second place, securing almost a quarter of the Portuguese parliament. And then in Poland, the Liberal candidate has also thwarted a right-wing Eurosceptic party, but it's so close that they'll likely head to a runoff next month. But today, it's the Romanian election that we're going to take a closer look at. The pro-European candidate, Nicuș Dan, has emerged as the winner in the presidential election against hard-right nationalist George Simeon. Despite exit polls pointing to his loss, Simeon actually said he'd be the next president a little earlier this morning. But as we're recording this podcast on Monday morning, Dan has just declared victory. It's the second time Romania is holding this election. The first time, 6 months ago, it was cancelled amid claims of alleged Russian interference, something Moscow denies. And the courts banned the first far-right candidate who handed over the reins to George Simeon. Nicu Ștefănuță is a Romanian MEP and the Vice President of the European Parliament. He joined Sally Sara this morning and he welcomed the results.
I'm very happy to report we had a similar result to what you had. We have a rejection of the far right in Romania.
And what do you make of these results?
It is a sign that Romanians clearly value the values of the European Union. They value their prosperity in the European Union. They reject Russia. You've mentioned Russia attacks. We had Russia attacks even today. Telegram, this disinformation, TikTok involvement. So we are in the middle of a global war for values. And I'm happy to report that Romania stood their ground on the war on values that it had to confront.
Why do you think the result has gone that way? What's happening in Romania, in your view?
We are in a part of the world that's so close to Russia, bordering Ukraine. We know who the aggressor is. We know who what the effects are. And we didn't want to bow down. I think bowing down to Russia is a mistake. Bowing down to dictators means appeasement. And appeasement never worked. We know that from the 30s. So the Romanians responded today in great numbers, in historic great numbers. For 30 years, there hasn't been so many people at the polls. And they said, no, we don't want that road. We want somebody honest. We want somebody who's pro-European. We want to keep the course.
What are the demographics currently in Romania with the younger population and the older population? What percentage of Romanians would remember the time of Ceausescu and that era?
You know, I was elected mostly by young people vote, and I know their the way they think. I know, I understand them very well. I defend them, and it was fantastic for me to see during my vote and also during this vote, bridges between generations. bridges that have been severed by everyone using their own social media, parents using TikTok. In Romania, about 10 million of our 20 million population use TikTok. So parents would break relations to their children based on the information they get on TikTok. And that for me is unbearable. I cannot stand it. I am a father. I couldn't possibly accept a situation where my daughter would sever relations with me because of politics. And that's a very important message I want to work on, bridging the gap between generations. Because right now we have seen the demographic problem in a sense. And the older people, because you asked me, they do remember communism, they do remember war, and they don't want it. Look, we in Europe, we only had an 80-year period without war, and that has been the one since 1945. Ever before, for 2,000 years, we haven't had one decade without war, except the period where we've been united.
How is the economy going in Romania at the moment, Nicu? When I was visiting Romania just over a year ago, it's almost as if you can see the political history on the streets. There were old villas that were abandoned. There were new businesses that were starting up. There were buildings from Ceausescu's time. How's the economy travelling at the moment now?
The economy is doing well because it's integrated in the European economy. However, the state has been neglectful of people's finances. We run a high deficit. And that was part of the hardship, you know, because the extreme right played very well on that, on the inflation, on overspending, on corruption. But our camp had to show, even though they play on this opportunity for them, they were not the right answer. And the Romanian people understood that extremism is not the right answer to fix inflation. Hitler in the 30s probably did a lot of public works, but also ended up destroying Germany, killed the opposition and so on. So people do not forget about these things. So yes, the economy is struggling, but we need somebody serious to fix it. We don't need a clown at the head of the state to fix our economy.
Nicu Ștefănuță is a Romanian MEP and the Vice President of the European Parliament. Next, we're going to stay overseas and look at this situation in Gaza as Israel ramps up its invasion.
There was something very different about this election campaign, and that was the truckloads of misinformation on the big social media platforms.
There are concerns about the impact AI could have on young voters.
These companies have snubbed their noses at governments in the United States, Canada, Britain, Australia for many, many years.
So where is this going, and what can be done to stop it? If You're Listening presents Australia versus the Internet. Find the podcast on the ABC Listen app.
The big news overnight out of Gaza: Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, announcing that his country would introduce a basic amount of food to the population of Gaza. It's being described as a lifting of the total aid blockade. His office says it's trying to ensure famine doesn't develop in Gaza and that Israel's expanded military campaign in the territory isn't jeopardised. But Israel's total blockade has already put the entire enclave at risk of famine. People are already starving. And you would have heard on the podcast last week, UN Commissioner Chris Sidoti say that Israel's actions barring aid had already amounted to a war crime. Mr. Netanyahu's office hasn't explained what a basic amount of food is, but he says any aid deliveries will bypass Hamas. That plan, it's proposing with the US to use private American firms for aid delivery, has also been rejected and criticised by the United Nations. Meanwhile, Israel is preparing to deploy more ground troops across the Strip in a renewed ground invasion that could lead to the total and indefinite occupation of Gaza. Last week, you would have heard us talk about Israel's bombing of the European hospital in Gaza. Clear signs that its military campaign and assault on Gaza's health system wasn't calming down. Dr. Majid Jabba is a doctor who was at the hospital when Israel bombed it. He spoke to Sally this morning.
What do you think about this deadly offensive that the Israeli military is carrying out at the moment in Gaza?
It's absolutely devastating. The Israeli army is starting a new invasion into areas that would not invaded by land before. Those areas are considered the last functioning residential areas in the Gaza Strip. We're talking about the area around European Gaza Hospital, Eastern Khan Yunis. So people are really stressed out and they don't have any other place to leave to, because the quote-unquote designated humanitarian zone and Al-Mawasi is already filled and crowded with people. So yeah, we're really scared, and the amount of casualties we're witnessing, it's just so immense. It reminds us when this whole conflict started.
What was it like being at the hospital when it was attacked last week, Dr. Jabba?
To paint a picture, the night before the bombing happened, there was a handover of the Israeli-American soldier that I done, Alexander. And once the release was done, the bombardment and the airstrikes during the night before started, and we had a lot of injuries, we had a lot of people coming into hospitals, people who are dead. And it was very, demoralizing, let's say, because we had hopes that this conflict, that there may be a ceasefire and into this war. And as we were handing shifts during the evening, we were packing, and the bombing of the hospital happened. The glass shattered, the tiles were flying everywhere, the doors are flying, we're choked by the smell of the gunpowder, they were coughing, the patients were screaming. Some of them tried to flee, even though they had broken bones, they were just trying to push themselves outside the hospital out of fear. And this whole chaotic scene, I mean, people were hanging out of the trees due to the explosion effect, and the crater buried people 6 feet under, and the drones and the quadcopters were shooting anyone who tried to help. And so it felt very hopeless, especially that we couldn't even bring the injured people inside the hospital to try to save them with the little resources that we had.
How does it compare to what you've seen before, Doctor?
I mean, to also bear in mind, the European Gaza Hospital wasn't directly bombed before. And so we used to have all these big influx of patients from the south of Gaza, from the middle of Gaza, even the north. So to compare it to the previous weeks, we had a gradual escalation of the airstrikes and the bombings, and we hoped that this has ended, but it really didn't. It kept increasing in severity. We had a few hours of quiet during the release of the Israeli-American soldier, but after that, it just held breaking loose to a point that the infrastructure of the hospital was completely destroyed and the hospital had to shut down. And today, the people who live in the residential area around European Gaza Hospital were completely leaving the area. They've been displaced out of fear of the bombings. The continuous bombardment has been going on, and the Israeli army is approaching. They're very close. They're about a kilometer away from the hospital right now.
The UN's human rights chief, Volker Türk, has said what is happening in Gaza could amount to ethnic cleansing. What do you think of those words?
I mean, of course. I mean, it doesn't take two to confirm that what has been going on, not only for the last year and a half, but the last 77 years has been ethnic cleansing. The Zionist belief has started with people with extreme thoughts. I'm not saying the Jewish people. I'm saying people who adopted the Zionist thought, and they can be Jews, they can be Christians, etc. But it starts, and it is by definition a belief of just displacing people and killing them because they want to settle, they want to colonize, they don't want to live in harmony with the people who have lived here for thousands of years, which are the Palestinians. You don't need to take my word for it. You look at all these people, thinkers, Jewish people, Norma Finkelstein, even right now, nowadays, Jeffrey Sachs, other people are just stating that this, even as Holocaust survivors, that what is going on here in Gaza is ethnic cleansing. And it is. Really. We've been killed, we've been murdered, displaced, we have no safety, and we're just trying to make ends meet with many themes such as starvation, the bombings, the lack of proper clean water and no shelter and not even medications or the chance for us to go somewhere safe. There is no place safe. Even hospitals are bombed.
Do you think that peace will come to Gaza?
Well, This is what we try to tell each other. It is a war, and it's not even a war. It's one-sided, and it has to come to an end. And we're hoping the way that the Middle Eastern countries and the Western countries are speaking up more and more by the day about forcing to end this genocide that's actually happening is something that will not be only talking points, but actual actions. I believe it will end. I don't know if it's today, tomorrow, and we're afraid of the extremist right government that's been going on. As it's not an overstatement. Everyone says it is an extreme government, that they want to take over Gaza. They want to kick everyone out of the land, which is all against international law. The Amnesty, the ICC, etc., or everyone is saying that this is inhumane and it has to end. And I really cannot process how anyone would think otherwise, because we're just witnessing another genocide, just the Holocaust, but much, much, much more documented going on here.
Dr. Majid Jabba, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Sally.
And just a note regarding those allegations of genocide, they're currently being examined by the International Court of Justice. Israel denies those allegations. Meanwhile, the International Criminal Court's arrest warrant for Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over alleged war crimes remains in place.
Sally Zara there, speaking with Dr. Majid Jabba, a doctor who was at the European hospital in Gaza when it was bombed by Israel. There's been an unprecedented number of scripts for medicinal cannabis. Experts say that in some cases, they're being issued every 4 minutes. The Australian Practitioner Regulation Agency says it has a task force underway to investigate issues around prescribing. At least one member of parliament is a medicinal cannabis user. There could be more. This morning, Greens Senator for Tasmania, Peter Wish-Wilson, came on the program, and this was the first question Sally asked him.
Medicinal cannabis was legalised in 2016, and since then, Senator, the industry has boomed. In your view, has regulation kept up with the increased demand?
No, I don't think it has, Sally. I think it's time for a review, and it's good that the government has announced that they have a task force to look into this. There has been a lot of lobbying going on in Parliament in recent years to try and get a review of the scheme. Now, obviously, I'm a believer of the scheme, Sally. I've been on it for over 3 years now. It's been life-changing for me, as it has for a number of other Australians. But I think the last thing the industry wants to see is confidence undermined in its product and its ability to change people's lives. So I think press the button, have a review, see what we can improve is actually a good thing for the industry.
Yeah, Senator, we were doing a story in the past couple of weeks and talking about concerns about some of the telehealth providers which have been issuing scripts for medicinal cannabis at rapid speed. How concerned are you about that aspect of the industry at the moment?
The way I would look at it, if Australia is getting access to a medicine that can change people's lives, if it's prescribed properly and people follow the instructions, then that's a good thing. And I think there's been over a million scripts written since this game started. And I think your article also said this morning, Sally, that, an expert saying the big majority of people on that scheme are getting benefit from it and aren't being harmed. But of course, the product does have potential for harm, like any medicine. I myself have changed my prescription 3 times to get it right. And I think that's the advantage under this special access scheme, is working with a medical practitioner. So of course, I would be concerned if people are only ticking a box and they're getting a telehealth consultant. I think it's us just having a more mature relationship with cannabis. Like, it's always been a recreational drug in Australia, and in the last 6 years, as you pointed out, it's been available for as a medicine. And I think the more Australians who learn more about it, especially if they work with a healthcare professional, will have a much more mature relationship with this medicine, and people will understand its benefits.
How would you describe in a personal context how much it's changed life for you once you've got the dosage and type sorted?
Yeah, look, the first thing is it's a better alternative than other medicines that you might need to take, for example, for chronic pain or for sleep apnea or a whole range of other medical conditions. It's not, as I said earlier, you need to follow your medical instructions. It's not without risks, but it does come with a lot less side effects than other drugs on the market. So in that sense, it was better than, for example, opioids or benzos and other things you might need. And for me, look, I'd like to see the price come down. It's still quite expensive, but I think it's worked really well for me. And I know, looking at the statistics, that a lot of other Australians share that same experience.
A few weeks ago, Senator, we had the chair of the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists, Brett Emerson, on the program, and he was raising concerns about the number of products on the market which contain THC. And he said that their doctors are seeing a link between the use of THC and psychotic breaks in patients with no mental health history. How important is it to make sure that the safety issues are taken care of with the way that medicinal cannabis is being prescribed at the moment?
It's absolutely critical, and it's critical for the industry to get this right. They want the Australian public to have confidence in this scheme, and they want, you know, people in the corridors of power in Canberra to have confidence in this scheme, from the regulators through to the minister and politicians. So it is really important that we get it right. I think it's really important to point out, though, very briefly, there's a difference between a drug-induced psychosis versus a psychosis in general. Mm-hmm. And of course, if your product's too strong, and it's not just obviously THC we're talking about here, it's any other product, it can cause psychosis. So if you over-medicate, that is a possibility. But I think Australians should be open-minded about the medical benefits. It can actually change people's lives for the better.
Earlier this morning on Breakfast, we heard from the new Environment Minister, Murray Watt. He said that he wanted to approach reforming environment laws in the spirit of the Samuel Review. Is that the kind of approach that the Greens want to see?
Well, of course it is, Sally. You know, I think that from a policy point of view, you know, Samuel obviously recommended that this all should be done together. But from a political point of view, you know, if the government comes to the Greens or anyone else and says, we want you to pass, you know, one third of this Samuel Review, then it may be an EPA, for example, right now, an Environmental Protection Agency. The question for us politically is, well, when are you going to bring back the third bill that talks about environmental standards? Because what's the point of having an EPA, even if it's fully independent and well-resourced? What's the point of having it if you don't have proper environment laws? I think, you know, listening to Murray today, you know, he's said he's in a process of listening, so it's very hard to judge what his views will be as a minister. But having seen, you know, the Prime Minister and the party come over the top of the previous Environment Minister, Sally, in the very last day, in the very last hour of their government in the 47th Parliament, weakening environment laws for the salmon industry, I really have my doubts about how serious they are about actually having environmental laws that protect the environment, that actually get the balance right, so that it's not just for corporations and their interests, but in the interests of actually protecting nature. And that's where you can be 100% sure the Greens will stand strong to make sure we have laws that will protect nature.
And that's Greens Senator for Tasmania, Peter Wish-Wilson, ending the podcast for today. All the interviews you've heard were presented by Sally Sara, produced by our Radio National Breakfast team, and the podcast was produced by Michael Commode. Now, coming up later this week on the Breakfast Wrap podcast, we've got a special edition for you, looking at an issue that you may have missed in the headlines.
We've had very little rain for the last 9 months now. The extent of this drought, it's everywhere in South Australia, Eyre Peninsula, York Peninsula, the whole state except the pastoral areas are suffering. But, you know, we've got native scrub here that's actually dying at the moment. That's how tough this drought is. It's the daddy of all droughts, and we haven't seen anything like this recorded in over 100 years in South Australia.
Parts of the country are experiencing historic drought conditions. We've been taking a closer look at what's happening on Radio National Breakfast. So this week on the Breakfast Wrap podcast, we're going to catch you up on just how bad it is. So keep an eye out for that special episode dropping later in the week. I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. Catch you next time.